This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Chester Graham. He's a urologist with Carle Clinic in Urbana. Dr. Graham joins us from time to time to talk about his area of specialty. In the past, we've talked about prostate health, incontinence, and impotence. Today, we thought we would spend some time talking about the anti-impotence drug Viagra. It's been showing up in the headlines and, of course, in comedy routines for some months now. Viagra is one of the most popular new prescription products in history. After 2 weeks on the market, Viagra accounted for 79.2% of new prescriptions written for impotence. This afternoon, an opportunity for us to learn more about Viagra and ask questions about it. Dr. Chester Graham is our guest. He's a member of the Carle Clinic Department of Urology, and he's happy to take your telephone calls this afternoon. You can join us with your questions, comments, concerns. Here are the telephone numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Outside Champaign-Urbana, use our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL and 333-WILL. Dr. Graham, good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste.
Viagra, one of the most popular new prescription products in history. What kind of interest have you seen in Viagra in your practice?
Well, we've seen quite a few people that have been coming out now specifically wanting the Viagra, just as you've mentioned, and a lot of the jokes that you've heard on The Tonight Show, Letterman, all of these places are true. I mean, we write so many prescriptions for Viagra, we are getting cramps in our hands. So we're seeing a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Now, are you seeing people who really aren't going to be helped by Viagra, or are you seeing a lot of people who will be helped by Viagra?
I guess the best way to look at it, in this country, somewhere between 10 and 30 million men have erectile problems, have impotence. They're estimating that about 100 million men are looking for it. Some of the people really need it and are going to be helped a great deal by it. There are some people that are young and just are hoping that their erections stay around longer. They're probably not going to be helped. But you have to admit, this has been the best pill that they've put out for erections, you know, to date, and that's why it's gotten so much press.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine that it's been out there on the market for a while now that you have some patients using Viagra. Have you seen good results?
Yeah, so far we are. The studies that have been done by the company, by friends of mine that are at UCLA and other places around, are showing that for most people, somewhere between 50 and maybe 70% of the people are going to be helped. Those people that are going to be helped the most are those that have what we call psychogenic impotence. So there's probably not a physical cause. It's more something maybe stress-related or something that's bothering them. But even those that have organic impotence, people that have high blood pressure, diabetes, maybe some heart disease, people who have had previous surgery, those people are seeing a benefit. People that have had prostate cancer, for example, or bladder cancer, or colon cancer, 50% improvement or even good erections with the Viagra. That was unheard of before this came out.
Mm. Can you give us some understanding, some information that's not too technical about what the drug is and how it works?
I'll try. Basically, Viagra is put out by Pfizer. What it's defined as is a phosphodiesterase type 5 inhibitor. What does that mean? Well, basically, if you look at the studies that have been done with erections for about the last 3 years, in all of the lay press, they were saying that nitric oxide was the mediator that was helping cause erections. Now what's happened in the past 3 years is they've looked at it at the molecular level. This is the technical stuff. And what they found out that nitric oxide is the precursor, It's the initiator. But then there's another set of enzymes that get activated. And the bottom line at this point is something called cyclic GMP. I know that's another technical thing, but if you'll just remember that cyclic GMP is the main effector of erections, that will help. What that does is it relaxes the smooth muscle in the penis and allows engorgement of blood. So that's cyclic GMP. Well, where does Viagra come in? Well, there's an enzyme that breaks down the cyclic GMP. That enzyme is called phosphodiesterase type 5. Sildenafil blocks that enzyme, which helps keep the cyclic GMP around longer, thereby keeping the erections around longer. So that kind of in a nutshell, it's a little bit technical, but if you remember that all it does is it blocks an enzyme that's used to stop the erection, I think that kind of helps you remember what Viagra will do.
It sounds so, that sounds like so much chemical information, and it sounds very organic to me. So why is it that this drug, the best results might be seen in, what did you call it, psychogenic?
Right. Psychogenic impotence, in fact, the numbers that they're seeing with Viagra are about 80% effective in that population. Again, that population generally tends to be younger. The men may be in their 20s, 30s, or 40s. It's usually something that comes on almost suddenly. Maybe they've lost their job. They had trouble one time trying to get an erection. Someone in their family is ill. There is some external stress that is affecting their mind. If you think about it, having an erection is a very technical thing. We look at it as being very simple and it's part of nature, but it can be very, very technical. The brain has to be working, the nerves in the back have to be working, the blood flow. I guess the bottom line is with psychogenic, there's no problem with the blood flow to the penis. There's no problem with the blood staying in the penis or it leaving. It's just, it's a, what we call it, increase in alpha tone. And if you can get that person to relax again, they'll probably get their erections back. So the Viagra, I think, in a way, is a placebo to some. And in others, it really does help.
What other drugs are out there available on the market to treat impotence? And how does this compare with those?
Okay. The other medicines that we've used in the past, the oral medications have been something called Yocan or Yohimbine. That was a root. It's actually an aphrodisiac. So it actually increases someone's desire or their libido. Another medicine that we use is trazodone. Trazodone is an antidepressant medication that has a side effect, and the side effect is that it helps keep erections around longer. So those were really the two big oral medications we used to use before Viagra. If those medicines failed, the next step that we would go to usually is either a vacuum type device, which if you think about it would pull blood into the penis. It was a suction type device that pulls blood into the penis, and then you'd put a little ring around the base of the penis that would help keep the blood in there. That worked usually 85 to 90% of the time. The injections that we have, alprostadil or prostaglandin E, or now they're calling it Cavergent, all of these type of medications are injections that you put into the penis, and that does the same thing the Viagra does in that it relaxes those smooth muscles in the corporal tissue to allow the blood to flow in. Those were really the others. There's another one called Muse, which is a medicated urethral suppository. It's a little pellet that you would put in the urethral channel, the tube that people urinate through. It dissolves, and it's the same substance, which is the prostaglandin E or alprostadil that we use in injections. So prior to Viagra, most of the things that we had that worked pretty well were actually either shots, which people don't like,
right,
a vacuum device, which works again, but people didn't really like a lot, or the Muse, which is the little pellet, and putting that down the urethra, a lot of people got kind of squeamish about that. So the nice thing about the Viagra is it's actually a pill. It makes it a lot easier for people to use.
I understand that there's some other things in development, something called Vasomax, something called apomorphine, and also some creams, prostaglandin creams.
Right. In fact, these are still experimental. The Vasomax that you were talking about is really an oral phentolamine or an oral regitine. That is a medicine that also dilates the blood vessels in the corporal tissue by blocking certain neurotransmitters. We've used phentolamine or regitine a lot in injections. It was a good combination medicine. We didn't use it very much solely, but we did use it with either papaverin or with the prostaglandin. Vasomax is being looked at. It's currently in Mexico. They came out with it about a month ago in Mexico. It's not out in this country yet. They're thinking that it may be on the market either in late 1998 or possibly in 1999. Side effects that those people have who would be taking the oral phentolamine or Vasomax would be either a stuffy nose, they might have some lightheadedness, they may have a decrease in blood pressure a little bit. So that's the Vasomax. The apomorphine is actually not a pill, but it would be sublingual. They'd be putting it under their tongue. This is a central acting agent, which works like dopamine, which is another neurotransmitter, and it works in the brain. That one is even a little bit slower to getting out. They're looking at sometime in 99 or maybe 2000 before that gets out. I should say a couple things about all of them for a minute. Again, remember, Viagra does not change the libido. It's not an aphrodisiac. It does not improve somebody's desire. Regitine is the same way. It improves the erection, but it does not improve libido. Apomorphine is going to be the same. It does not change someone's libido. Side effects with the apomorphine, the biggest is nausea. Since it's a centrally acting agent, a lot of people are getting nausea and having to take antiemetics, medicines to try and stop the nausea. They also get some fatigue, lightheadedness, maybe yawning because of the act like dopamine, which kind of slows things down a little bit. So those are the newest medicines that are out, and we really have a lot to go before we know if they're going to be effective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is there something about the ability to take a little pill that makes us think that we're going to solve all our problems that complicates this whole issue of dealing with the problem of impotence?
I think the answer to that is yes. If I'm reading you correctly, I see a lot of people in my office who come in who would like Viagra, and it's not really just for erections, but they think that it's going to make them 20 years of age again. It's almost like a magic pill. They think that they're going to lose fat, they're going to gain muscle mass and start attracting all the women again. And that's not true. That's not the idea of that or the other medicines. It's just to try and help get the erections back for those men that really can't get an erection.
Yeah. We haven't talked about the side effects of Viagra. What are those?
Yeah, Viagra has some side effects also. The most, I guess the worst side effect is going to be if you take it with another medication. And the biggest thing is a medication called nitrates. And those are medicines that people who have either high blood pressure or heart problems are on. If you take the Viagra with the nitrates, it may end up dropping somebody's blood pressure 50 to 90 points, thereby causing either heart attacks, strokes, or arrhythmias, therefore deaths. And we can talk about that. There have been some deaths due to Viagra. But the ones we see most commonly with Viagra would be a headache, flushing, or when they get a little bit red in the face, some indigestion. They may have nasal congestion. Those are the big four. And you may see that anywhere from 8 to 15% of the time. Now, if you look at it in the studies, only 2% of the people stop taking Viagra because of the side effects. So, yes, they may have the side effects, but it's not that significant, in other words. The other things that people may have, though, other side effects, a little bit less, there are some vision changes. The one that's most notable is blue-green. So they may end up seeing things that are a little bit different colors that only last usually while the Viagra is in the body, and that's anywhere from 1 to 3 hours, and that usually goes away. The other one is there may be some bleeding problems if people are on blood thinners. Now, I mean like Coumadin or heparin-type blood thinners, not just aspirin or other antiplatelet medication. But those are the biggest, I think, the headache, the flushing, the indigestion, the nasal congestion.
And if there are underlying conditions where Viagra isn't a good idea, as you mentioned, if you're on something like a nitroglycerin tablet for heart trouble, that kind of thing. So also, I think this says that this is a drug not to be used unless you're seeing a physician and you have been prescribed this medication. Because I kind of feel that there could be some danger here of guys taking this and getting into some, you know, serious health consequences as a result. You know, there's some potential for abuse or misuse.
Well, there, it's very interesting. They did when they did the study, and we'll talk about the doses later, but the highest dose that they recommend is 100 milligrams of the Viagra. During the study, to test to see what type of side effects, if they went and somebody did overdose or something like that with it, they took 800 milligrams and really didn't see any other problems. But most of the people that they did this in were younger males, I think. What we're finding now is that there have been 32 deaths attributed to Viagra. Now, early on, in the first 16 deaths, six of those people were taking concomitant nitrates, nitroglycerin, or other longer-acting nitrates. And again, their blood pressure could drop 90 points. I mean, that's significant. What we're seeing now is that the most of the deaths are because people have had significant blood pressure problems, diabetes, significant heart problems or vascular problems. And what's happening is men that haven't had erections maybe for 5, 10, and 15 years who are now 70, 80, 85, 90 who are wanting the Viagra. Some of them do fine, but these guys tend to have some heart problems, some cholesterol plaques, atherosclerosis, and if you look at it, sexual activity increases the heart rate, it increases the blood pressure, so that a lot of these guys that have bad hearts or the vessel disease end up getting into trouble. So what you have to do now is you really need to check with these patients very closely, and you should ask them, you know, how far can you walk? If they can't walk 3 city blocks, they may not be a candidate. Or if they can't walk up a couple flights of stairs without getting really winded, they might not be a candidate. And again, that's because of the increase in blood pressure and increase in pulse rate that occurs with the Viagra. So you're absolutely right. There are some damaging things that can happen with the Viagra.
Yeah. 32 deaths attributed to Viagra. What do we know about the age of these men, the ages?
Most of them are older. Most of them are going to be in the 75, 80, 80-degree range, or have had bad vessel disease in the heart, maybe a couple of bypasses, or very high cholesterol levels. People that, in general, didn't do much.
How is it then that these men were given prescriptions for Viagra? Was the doctor in error? Was the patient not up front? Was the drug company not up front in terms of what the risks are?
I think that it's probably a combination. I went to a course on a tangent here, a course out in San Diego at the national meeting where they talked about all of these new medications. And a guy by the name of Irwin Goldstein, who's at Boston University, and he's one of the main examiners looking at Viagra. he shows a picture, one of his slides, of a man using injections to get erections, shots. And he said, if men are willing to do this, they're willing to do anything to get erections. So your point about the patients, are they maybe not telling the truth? Absolutely. We've had people that, when they heard about the nitrate scare and who needed nitroglycerin for a bad heart, who would lie to the doctor. He would say, are you taking any nitrates? Do you take any nitroglycerin? They would lie and say no. So that is one factor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that getting erections mentally is a big thing, and it's very important to a lot of men. So I think that's one of the reasons. Now, did maybe some of the doctors make an error too? I think that probably. It's probably a combination. When the drug first came out, we didn't know, in all honesty, about the risks to the heart, the risk to increasing the blood. It just wasn't one of those factors that was looked at in their study. So I think that, yeah, there was a little factor that involved both the company and both physicians. In fact, if you'll look at the brochures put out by Pfizer, a lot of the facts that we want to know about, we don't know. In other words, what about long-term use?
Mm-hmm.
Can it cause cancer? If you look in the little handout, it's that we don't know. What is the risk to the eyes if you've got this blue-green vision change? We don't know. So there's a lot of we don't know the answer to this because we don't have it long enough to know that.
Yeah.
So I think there is some patient fault because they want the erection bad enough. I think there's some doctor fault, and I think there is some due to Pfizer. I think it's a combination.
Yeah. So now when you see someone and you have a candidate who you think could really benefit by taking this drug, do you advise them, you know, this is a short-term thing, or do you give him the idea of what the risks are and what the unknowns are and say, we've got to watch it, or these are things you've got to think about?
When I see a patient that I think would be a good candidate, we sit down and we talk about all that. And as again, we talked at the very beginning, I write so many prescriptions that I made out little handouts to give to the patients that talked about the different side effects they may have. It's got nitrates in big, bold letters. And we talk about all of these type of things. I don't talk about it just being short-term because I don't know if it's going to be short-term or not. What we do, though, is we start people on a kind of a moderate dose, which is the 50 milligram dose. We ask them to try that two separate times. And then if that doesn't work, to then double the dose, to try the 100 milligrams and see if that works. If that dose works, then I can write them a prescription for the 100 milligram tablets. And again, I've looked at all the medicines that they were on. You know, I've checked pretty much with their heart status to make sure they don't have any of these risks. But if there's anybody that has any of the significant risks, I ask them to talk to their cardiologist first and see, is this person a candidate or not? And again, with some of the medications they're on, we ask, is there some way they can get off of those or they're not a candidate for the Viagra?
You can almost see that, you know, a physical would be necessary and a stress test and a really forthright kind of back and forth conversation between maybe even not only the physician, someone like yourself and the patient, but maybe you and the patient's any other doctors that he is seeing.
Yeah, sometimes we need to do that. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Absolutely.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. My name is Celeste Quinnan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Chester Graham. He's a urologist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. He joins us from time to time to talk about his area of specialty, and in the past we've talked about prostate health, incontinence, and impotence. And this afternoon we're talking about Viagra. Viagra is one of the most popular new prescription products in history. If you've got questions, give us a call. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, excuse me. If you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area, use the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455, 333-WILL and 1-800-222-9455. 222 WILL. You mentioned the dosage, Dr. Graham, and you said you start folks out at 50 milligrams, is that right?
Right.
Is that, by and large, a successful dosage, or do you have to go up, and how far do you go up?
There are three doses right now of the Viagra. There's a 25 milligram tablet. That's usually recommended to start people on who have some liver damage who may be on some of these medications that we've talked about. The reason for that is that Viagra is cleared via the liver, so that if there is any liver damage, you want to start them on as low a dose as possible. In general, in most of the people, 25 milligrams will not be successful. So in the studies that they did, I believe only maybe 5% of the people were able to take 25 milligrams and get a successful dosage regimen. 50 milligrams is the usual starting dose, and that really about maybe 20 to 25% of the people will be on that. Again, most of the people are going to shift up to the 100 milligram dose, and usually around 70% or maybe 75% of the people are going to need to take the 100 milligrams of Viagra. Now, the interesting thing from the company, and I've talked with many of the different sales reps about this, the cost of Viagra is the same, whether it's a 25 milligram tablet, a 50 milligram tablet, or the 100 milligram tablet. In general, the cost is anywhere from $7 to $10 a pill. And for anybody listening, that's significant, as you know. Most medicines are significantly lower than that. One thing that I have talked to them about was the reason. Why is it so expensive?
Mm-hmm.
The representatives initially say, well, we first tested this as a heart pill, and that's true, they did, and it failed. But they found this wonderful side effect of erections. And when you look at it, it didn't have to go through the FDA very long. That's usually the big cost in our country, is the FDA looks at it for 2 and 3 years. They didn't have to do that. So getting back to that, why is it so expensive?
Mm-hmm.
And what we found out is basically because they can. They can charge it because people will pay that amount. So it's not fair. I don't like it. I don't think any of the people like it, and I know the insurance companies don't like it. But bottom line, they feel that that's a reasonable cost for the product. Now, one thing that you can do, though, it is a tablet, so you can get a pill cutter or a pill splitter, and you can cut it in half. It's not easy because it's a funny-shaped pill.
It's a diamond-shaped pill.
That's right. But you can cut it in half, so therefore if you get by with a 50-milligram dose, you can buy the hundreds, cut those in half, and it will at least reduce the cost. The one other thing I guess I forgot to mention is that most insurance companies are not covering the cost. Again, $7 to $10 a pill can add up and be a big cost for the patients. It can be a big cost for the insurance companies, and I think that's the reason that they're not paying for it. Again, 10 to 30 million men may need it. 100 million are asking for it. So I think that's probably the reason that insurances are not covering it at this time.
Yeah, well, that brings me to a couple of interesting questions I wanted to ask you about. The federal government has ordered the states to pay for Viagra prescriptions under Medicaid programs. Two, New York and Wisconsin, have refused. They say that's not the federal government's prerogative. Also, Kaiser Permanente, one of the country's largest HMO organizations, is excluding coverage. And apparently you said many insurance companies. I don't know about the Carl HMO. Is it covered?
Health Alliance, I don't believe it's covered.
Okay.
I don't believe it is.
And to give folks an idea of what the HMOs and the insurance companies are balking at, Kaiser estimated that nationwide coverage would cost at $100 million a year. And to give you some idea, they say that for all antiviral drugs last year, they paid out $59 million. So it's a significant cost. Now, here's what I want to ask you about. There are some folks who are saying this is not a medical necessity. But my question is sexual function a part of one's health? And how, as a physician, do you, you know, sort that all out?
Yeah, that's the bottom line question, if you will. I think you're going to find people who are going to sit on both sides of the fence. I really do, to be honest. Yes, I think that it is it a medical necessity? That's the definition. You got to say no, because you don't have to have it to survive physically. But what about emotionally? What about intellectually? Mm-hmm. You know, I think the answer to that's yes, it would be. So once they come up with a definition, then I think you'll be able to give that answer. But I think you'll see it across the country that most people are saying if things are not medically necessary, and that's italics. I mean, we're not sure exactly what that means. They're not going to cover certain things, and that's why Viagra is one of these that's being hit.
Yeah. Well, you look at how many men want it, and you think about for couples dealing with impotence, it can be like living with the proverbial 800-pound gorilla.
Absolutely. No, you're 100% right, and I think it's a difficult question for everyone involved, the patient. I think it's very difficult for the physicians because we're kind of put in the middle. There are some insurances where if we write letters to the insurance company stating that the person has an organic cause, they will cover it. And so that's the physicians. And then there's the insurance companies, and they're kind of on the fence too.
Yeah. We've got a couple of callers waiting to talk with us. Let's go first to our caller on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
A question and a comment. Last year, I smoked too long and had my right lung completely out. I've listened to the radio a lot and been terribly interested in whether I am a good candidate or a dose of Viagra.
Comment
is that without sex in a year and a half, hey, they should cover it. It's a bad way to go.
Can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
Okay. How old are you?
63, 64 Sunday.
Okay. Besides, the lung was removed, was that for cancer?
Cigarette cancer, yep.
Okay. What other medical problems do you have?
Oh, spinal stenosis, which I've had since birth, I guess.
Okay. What about high blood pressure?
No.
Any heart problems?
No.
Okay, so no vessel problems that you know of?
No.
Other than smoking?
Other than smoking, and I quit when I had my lung out. And Dr. Rain said, I won't do it unless you quit.
Good. He said the right thing. You may be a candidate. It doesn't necessarily mean that you are. I think you'd have to talk to somebody more about that. But the second issue is, it from what you've told me, it may work. It may very well work, but there's no guarantee. Remember, in people that have organic impotence, which people that have diabetes, spinal cord injuries, previous surgery, vascular disease, that may be, it'll work about 50 to 70%. So give yourself a 50-50 shot. It may work, it may not. You may very well be a candidate. You probably ought to come in and talk to somebody about that. Let them go over it with you, and then they could give you that indication.
Okay,
and in your comment, are you still there?
Yeah.
The comment, I think you're exactly what I'm talking about. For all the patients that are out there, I think that you're speaking for them. You know, they all feel it should be covered. I guess the insurance companies are figuring that people that are in their 60s, 70s, and so forth, if they're going to have any sexual activity, maybe it's once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. And so that if they have to pay, say, $10 once a week or $10 every 2 weeks, they're figuring that's not a significant cost. I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you that may be their belief. So I agree with you, though.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The only other thing is that I do take an awful lot of prednisone, and I hate it.
I can't get you off of that.
I understand. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks for your call this afternoon. 333-9455, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Our next caller is on line 2 in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I heard on Oprah, I think it was, that some women are part of a study using Viagra for lack of sexual response for women.
You're absolutely right. I was hoping we were going to get into that. There, you know, I mentioned Irwin Goldstein earlier, and again, he's from BU, Boston University. He's a neat guy, but he believes not only does Viagra help men, which it's been shown to do, but that women also have something called sexual dysfunction. And this is the first year that they're coming out with that. It's called the Female Sexual Dysfunction Society. And it's a group of urologists and gynecologists that have been basically trying to treat women who've had your exact mention there. And the belief, if you will, is that generally it's in postmenopausal women. And what ends up happening when they lose the hormones is that the vaginal tissue becomes dry. And so when that happens, it's because of lack of blood flow, lack of oxygenation. So what you end up getting is with sexual activity, it's uncomfortable for many, many women, and therefore they don't want any part of it. So what they're looking at right now is giving these women Viagra. And the belief, and I don't know if this is proven yet, is that it's going to increase blood flow to the vaginal tissue in postmenopausal women, keeping the oxygenation up and keeping the moisture up, keeping the lubrication up. And so that is how they're thinking that it's going to work.
This is all very interesting to me. Well, first of all, a lot of people don't realize that males and females, their reproductive organs come from the same tissue. So a clitoris is the equivalent, or I should say a penis is the equivalent of a clitoris.
That's correct. You're correct.
In terms of structure and where they come from. But I find it also very ironic that suddenly men are demanding to be able to restore sexual functioning, and yet we won't cover contraceptives for women under insurance policies. It seems to me if we're going to have an awful lot of men running around having sex who haven't been having sex, even if most of their partners happen to be older women, some of them are going to be younger women, and they ought to be funding birth control pills, too.
You know what? I agree with you 100%. If they're going to cover men, I think they've got to cover the women. And so this is the dilemmas that this country is getting into, and I'm sure that's another reason that the insurance companies are kind of balking at this. Gee, if we start doing this, that's going to bring out this whole other area. And you're absolutely right. It shouldn't be unfair. If you're going to cover the men, you got to cover the women. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, I think this new thing that you're talking about right before with the female sexual dysfunction is a very, very interesting area. And in fact, you're going to see a lot of this written about probably in the next couple of years. I really think so. Keep your eyes peeled to that, because that's going to be real exciting, I think. I'm really happy they're starting to look at that, because in the old days, as of right now, it's basically giving women more hormones or some other medicine that may lubricate the vagina, but that's not curing anything. This may be something to help with that. Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Pfizer has apparently started clinical trials in Europe, and Boston University is beginning a study this summer. So there is that to think about. Also, I think that if this could benefit women in terms of, you know, helping their sexual function after menopause, that it would also be a drug that you would, you know, use on a as-needed basis, and you wouldn't be taking a drug, hormones, you know, daily, and so that's something else to think about.
That's possible, yeah. Oh. Again, as you said, they're just starting these studies. Now, Viagra, the generic name for that is sildenafil, and it's been in Europe for a long time. So I wish they'd have done these studies earlier, but just as you brought out, they're just starting all of these. One other new area, if I could, with the Viagra, and again, Irwin Goldstein brought this up. Again, he's from BU, is not only using it for men that are lacking erections, who can't get their erection, have impotence or erectile dysfunction, but also as a prevention to impotence. The reason for this, again, is that they've done some studies looking at men when they were in their 20s and 30s, and the number of times that they had sexual activity. And men that would have it perhaps three or four times a week, compared to men that would have it maybe once a week, compared to men that was maybe once every 2 weeks or once a month. And what you look at is the quality of their erection in those three groups when they start, and then when they get older. And what you're finding out, if you have curves, is that it's kind of that old adage, and I use this a lot, if you don't use it, you lose it. So the men that were having erections maybe once every 2 weeks or once a month, those people were getting impotent much quicker, maybe in their 40s and 50s, and having a lot of trouble. The men that were maybe having sexual activity a couple times a week, you know, maybe a little bit longer, or at least they were having better erections longer. The men that were having sexual activity three and four times a week, those guys had their better erections longer. And so what they're looking at is, when do we have the most amount of erections? Is it with sexual activity? No. Men have their erections at night when they're asleep. You probably have 9 minutes where you have an erection. So what they're thinking is that if the Viagra, as in women, does the same thing to men, keeps the blood flow up, keeps the oxygenation up, decreases the atrophy or the shrinkage of that tissue, that it may prevent erectile dysfunction, impotence. Now, the only problem, if you're looking at cost now, taking it on an as-needed basis versus getting every guy to take it before they go to bed at night, we're looking at a significant cost burden.
We're here, right here at the end of our time, but I wanted to bring up something, and it's important enough that even though your answer will have to be somewhat short, abbreviated, I think it's important enough to mention. Does the drug show up in semen? Does it have any effect in terms of any potential for birth defects and those issues? That's a really important thing, and I'm sorry that it's so late here in the show, but...
Well, actually, that's an easy one to answer. Okay. If you look at the brochures that they put out, it's an I don't know.
Wow.
That's exactly right. That's one of the things that you really would like to know is for maybe younger men that have diabetes that you're giving this to. You know, their wives may be young too. Are you potentially causing any harm there? We don't know the answer. And then again, if there was a child born, what's the possibilities there? We don't know the answer. So a lot of this is we don't know. These are things that have not been looked at yet.
Wow. That's a big I don't know. Are they studying that?
The answer to that is I don't know of the studies, but I'm sure they must be looking at it now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in and talking with us this afternoon, and we'll do it again in the future, I hope.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Dr. Chester Graham is a urologist with Carle Clinic in Urbana.